Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Now, I've also got...
Here's John Williams.
A big question. All right, Kim, this will be directed at you, just for some advice, some sharing. It's 108. Hi, it's John Williams, the scary, scary moochie.
Oh, have mercy.
You almost want to say letter email. It reads like that, but it's actually a live conversation he had with a New Yorker reporter. I'll read from that. It'll be brief because I'm going to cut out the dirty parts. But before we get to any of that, yesterday Dave Enick came up to me in the hallway, and he had a little container, and there were some pretzels in there that were dipped like in a chocolate and then covered with sprinkles. You know those kind of pretzels?
Yeah, his wife made those, I think.
Yeah, they looked great, and everybody seemed to love them, and I believe that they were fantastic. I've had versions of that before. I'm not a fan of that food stuff. And so when David came up to me in the hall, he said, "Hey, how are you? Hey, try some of these pretzels. My wife made them. They're great." And I said, "No, thank you. I don't like those." And then he kind of shrugged and said, "Okay." And he went on. And I thought, I probably played that badly. When somebody offers you, "Hey, I just made these cookies or the pretzel," what do you think? Should I have just taken it?
Well, I turned them down too because I'm trying to be healthy and good. Yeah. And you have to turn food down around here because there's just always an abundance of it.
But if I had said, I don't know that it would have been credible to him, and it would not have been the truth if I'd said, "No, I'm trying to cut down. I'm not trying to cut down on anything. I have bacon in my hands as I'm talking to you, so that's not that."
So you're worried that you offended him because his wife made them and you didn't take one.
And it's not why I didn't take it. If Betty Crocker had made it, I wouldn't have taken it because I don't like dipped pretzels.
Well, see, and I don't understand that at all, John, because the salty and sweet thing is probably the best combo ever. But we'll have to talk about that another day.
I know. So then I'm thinking maybe the right play is you just say, "Oh, hey, great." And then you take it and throw it away. But that seems to be so wrong.
Sneaky.
Deceitful, sneaky,
right,
and wasteful.
Agreed.
So now I'm walking around with a dipped pretzel trying to give it to somebody. And by dipped pretzel, I mean a pretzel dipped with sprinkles on it.
And chocolate.
And so I thought, well, this is ridiculous. So probably just saying, "No, thanks, I'll pass." You know what the mistake
was? But Dave knows you're an honest guy and you tell the truth. And I'm sure he wasn't offended.
I'm the scary moochie of pretzels here at the radio station. I'm a front stabber. I speak the truth. I don't mince words.
On the record or off the record?
I want it leaked. I don't want it leaked. I'll leak it. I don't like dipped pretzels. But I've been in that situation before. And more often than not, I think I'll take it. "Oh, hey, great." And then you just hide it in a drawer.
Or something. And you find it 3 months later.
I know, and you go, "Wait, I still don't like dipped pretzels." Or peanut butter cookies. People will come up to you with a peanut butter cookie and say, "Oh, man, my wife made these. I made these peanut butter." I don't like peanut butter cookies.
Oh, my gosh, John, we have opposite taste buds. Everything you're talking about is what I love.
I really feel wrong in all of these instances. I know I'm, an outlier, so I feel bad about the way I handle that, and I'm not sure if I handled that correctly. What's the matter, Elif? What do you think?
Well, usually, I think what you're suggesting is nice, that you take it and you just sort of hoard it.
Destroy
without knowing.
It. Never consume it.
Well, or there's that, or you can just say, what I do is I always go, "No, thank you," and I smile and I do this thing with my eyebrows where it makes you look like you feel sorry, and then you touch your heart.
But Elif, we're all family here. It's, everybody's honest.
Wait a minute, what was this thing you just did? So I do the thing with my eyebrows and look sad?
Yeah, like, "No, thank you."
And then... I'm not sure what that conveys.
Thank you, but I shouldn't, There should be a hand gesture in there.
And the hand gesture to the heart, as though, "God bless you, thank you, but no."
Yeah.
And no other explanation. All right, I'll try that next time, Elif. Maybe that's... I'm not sure that I can do the thing with the eyebrows, but I'll give it a shot.
All right.
On Wednesday night, Ryan Lizza from The New Yorker received a call from Anthony Scaramucci, the new White House communications director. How about that? And you've surely heard about the story. It blew up the Twitter last night. And I'll just read from it a little bit here. Earlier in the night, he says, I tweeted, citing a senior White House official, that Scaramucci was having dinner at the White House with the president, the first lady, and Sean Hannity, and the former Fox News executive Bill Shein. Just shoot me. You know, for some people, that is like a dream dinner. Sean Hannity is one of the biggest stars of television. And the president is the most famous person on earth. And his wife is one of the most beautiful. And then this Bill Shein guy. I mean, it's just fantastic. I would rather ride an amusement park ride in Ohio than be at that dinner, but that's beside the point. And so he says, who leaked that to you, Scaramucci, to Lizza? How did you know that I had dinner with those people? Lizza writes, I said I could not give him that information. He responded by threatening to fire the entire White House communications staff. What I'm going to do is, he said, I'll eliminate everyone in the comms team and we'll start over. I laughed, not sure if he really believed that such a threat would convince a journalist to reveal a source. That is a rookie mistake. Mr. Scaramucci, if you're listening, and I know you prefer the mooch, but that doesn't work. Even I know that. I've never been to Washington, D.C., but on a tour twice. Even I know that's not going to get somebody from the New Yorker to go, oh, wait, you're going to fire those people? Well, then I'll give you my source. That's just not how it goes. Maybe one of the lessons learned here is that you should not take cocaine. Do you think that he was on some sort of drug or alcohol-induced rage, some sort of bender when he did this? I mean, literally, when I first heard about this and then started to read about it, I thought, oh, he's drunk. But then it seems manic enough that I don't know how everybody behaves differently when they're drunk, but this sounds more like somebody who's on something other than alcohol. Anyway, who leaked that to you? He asked. I said I couldn't give him that information. And then he said, I asked these guys not to leak anything, and they can't help themselves. You're an American citizen. This is a major catastrophe for the American country. So I'm asking you as an American patriot to give me a sense of who leaked it. These weren't the nuclear launch codes. He's playing on his patriotism. He wants him to forestall an American catastrophe because he needs to know how he found out that he had dinner with Ivanka. I'm sorry, Melania, Donald Trump, and Sean Hannity. I mean, it's just not that coherent. Later he writes, Scaramucci's first public appearance as communications director was a slick and conciliatory performance at the lectern in the White House briefing room last Friday. He suggested it was time for the White House to turn a page, but since then he's become obsessed with leaks. Meanwhile, several damaging stories about Scaramucci have appeared in the press, and he blamed Reince Priebus for most of them. Now he wanted to know whom I had been talking to. Scaramucci, who initiated the call, did not ask for the conversation to be off the record or on background. Second rookie mistake. If you're going to say what you're about to say, and you kind of know you are, then you have to say, this is for background. This is off the record. He didn't. Is it an assistant to the president? He asked. This is the way I do it when I'm talking to somebody who's on Survivor and I want to know who got kicked off.
Am I getting warmer?
I know. And then you see if you can trip them up. Well, would you say that? No, that's not how it's you're not going to win. I again told him that I couldn't say, okay, I'm going to fire every one of them. And then you haven't protected anybody. So the entire place will be fired, all of them, over the next 2 weeks. I asked him why it was so important for the dinner to be kept a secret. I've asked people not to leak things for a period of time and give me a honeymoon period. They won't do it. He was getting more and more worked up. The issue, he said, was that he believed Reince Priebus had been worried about the dinner because he hadn't been invited. Reince is, now here's the quote, Reince is a bleeping paranoid schizophrenic, a paranoiac. I love the word paranoiac, and I'm going to start to use it casually in conversations with friends. I've never heard of paranoiac. Is that schizophrenic and paranoid? You're a paranoiac?
Is that a new word?
I don't know if that's a word.
I've not seen it before.
Ella, is paranoiac a word?
I'm looking.
Thank you. Scaramucci was particularly incensed by a Politico report about his here's rookie mistake number three. We don't have to keep score, but heck, he might as well just call them out. They're so blatant. Scaramucci was particularly incensed by a Politico report about his financial disclosure form, which he viewed as an illegal act of retaliation by Priebus. The reporter said Thursday morning that the document was publicly available. She'd simply obtained it from the Export-Import Bank. Scaramucci
It had already been out. Yeah, it was already public document.
After a period of time, these sorts of things for White House initiates are made public. It's not protected. It's not a felony to find out or to release it. He insisted to me that Priebus had leaked the document and that that was a quote-unquote felony. I've called the FBI and the Department of Justice, he told me. Are you serious, I asked. The swamp will not defeat him, he said, breaking into the third person. They're trying to resist me, but it's not going to work. I've done nothing wrong on my financial disclosures, so they're going to have to go reproduce with themselves, he said. I kind of cleaned that last part up. Really, this sounds like somebody who's on something, doesn't it? I don't know what's more comforting, the fact that he did this straight and sane and sober, or that he was on some sort of thing and it caused him to just get all crazy.
I think you're making a big jump there.
You do?
I do.
Really? It's 100% speculation on my part. I'm only basing that on the content of this conversation, but if this is an accurate representation, that sounds to me like somebody who's medicated.
I think he has the same tone pretty much as he did during the briefing, but just with spicier words. And I don't mean spicy.
Let's go to LF Garris, already in progress.
Paranoiac is someone who is paranoid.
So a paranoiac
is
a
noun. It's a noun for someone who's paranoid.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so a paranoiac. Well, good for him then. In his condition, he's using fine words correctly. Reince is a paranoid schizophrenic, a paranoiac. All right. I think we've all learned something. Let's pick up with the article. Unlike other Trump advisors, Lizza writes, I've never heard Scaramucci say a bad word about the president. Quote, what I want to do is I want to bleeping kill all of the leakers, and I want to get the president's agenda on track so we can succeed for the American people. He cryptically suggested that he had more information about White House aides. Okay, the mooch showed up a week ago. Again, he's referring to himself in the third person with a nickname. This is going to get cleaned up very shortly, okay? Because I nailed these guys. I've got digital fingerprints on everything they've done through the FBI and the bleeping Department of Justice. What? I interjected. Boy, sometimes interviews just fall in your lap.
Well, just look at what he just said there. So he doesn't even officially work for the government yet. I think his start date is next month.
Scaramucci is not an official government employee?
No, I don't think so.
That was lost on me.
Well, unless I'm mistaken, but I heard somewhere that he starts mid-August or something.
Maybe he starts never.
But just look what he's saying. There's no way all that could have been done in the 5 days he's been working there or not working there.
Digital fingerprints on everybody?
Right.
Well, and it's reminiscent of the president's penchant for using the Department of Justice, the FBI, or anybody else to settle personal scores. There's no need to get the FBI cracking on who had dinner with whom. But boy, is he ticked about this. Well, the felony, they're going to get prosecuted, probably for the felony, he added. Really, you think this guy sounds straight? This is not a sober person. Well, the felony, they're going to get prosecuted, probably for the felony, he added. The lie detector starts, but then he changed the subject and returned to what he thought was illegal leaks of his financial disclosure forms. Scaramucci said he had to get going. Yeah, let me go, though, because I've got to start tweeting some bleep to make this guy crazy, he said to a reporter who was writing it all down.
And then he did, right? He tweeted something at Priebus and then
he
went
did.
Through it?
And the tweet, I remember when the tweet came out because it was a sentence fragment. You know, I'm not the grammar police on tweets. Actually, I am. But it's dangerous to read too much into how people punctuate in 144 characters or whatever. Is it 144, David, a tweet or less? But minutes later, he tweeted, in light of the leak of my financial info, which is a felony, period. Okay, that's just bad grammar. In light of, he tweeted, in light of the leak of my financial info, which is a felony, period, I will be contacting at FBI and the at Justice Department, hashtag swamp, at Reince45. With the addition of Priebus's Twitter handle, he was making public what he had just told me, that he believed Priebus was leaking information about him. The tweet quickly went viral. Within 2 hours, he deleted the original tweet and posted a new one saying he wasn't targeting the chief of staff. I almost wonder sometimes if it's worse to delete a tweet, because not only does it live forever, but now you're saying, I made a big mistake. 140, thank you, David. You know you've arrived when Saturday Night Live is starting to wonder who they are going to cast to play you. I like Vince Vaughn. I think he would be a good Scaramouche.
Vince Vaughn?
No, you don't think so?
No. He's way too big and strong and handsome.
No, I'm just kidding.
Powerful. I'm sorry, was that out loud? No, he's a much bigger guy, though.
Okay. Yeah. It's Vince Vaughn. Who is it? I've got a list here of people they're considering.
Really?
Yeah. Mario Cantone, the beau from Sex and the City. Ben Stiller. Mikey Day. Pete Davidson. Pete Davidson could probably do it.
Yeah, he could do it.
Some of them are Saturday Night Livers. Some of them are not.
Tina Fey. I think we got to crush genders
just
on
give
these.
Just give Melissa McCarthy. Yeah. She seems to be able to do everything right over there, so give her a shot at it. One last note just to catch you up on the president's and your life. Showtime is going to do an animated cartoon series about the president's life and hijinks. And we do have an apology about the president's speech before the Boy Scouts. I want to extend my sincere apologies to those who were offended by the political rhetoric that was inserted into the jamboree. It was never our intent. We sincerely regret that. But that was from the Boy Scouts. That could have been from the president, but it was not.
Again, okay, so we talk about how extraordinary times are right now.
Yeah.
You just have the Boy Scouts apologizing for speech. No, really.
It was given to them by the president.
By the president of the United States, and they're apologizing to the boys and the parents.
Yeah. So there's the latest on that. You may have something to say about that interview with the New Yorker reporter. We'll pick up a phone line or two in a minute. You can text, as you just did. The text is just poured in.
How did you do that?
It's a gift. Or you can call 312-981-7200. This is WGN.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
They're going to do a rock opera about the Trump administration, and I don't know how they don't end up weaving that in. But even better, you know, when he maybe calls somebody or tweets, instead of going to maybe say they text and instead of going ba-blink, or when he walks in the door, maybe just when he walks in the door in Trump the Musical, this will play.
Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening me.
And then Scaramouche walks in. I'm just trying to help. It's 129. Paul, you're on WGN. What can I do for you?
I think the media actually adds to my frustration, but I voted for Trump. And right now I want to bury my head in the sand so deep that I can't even feel the vibration of people walking on top of me. I'm so sick and tired of the name calling with him, the bullying, and now it's like we brought in another cast member to this drama, Scaramouche. And the comments that he's making, I don't feel like we're a great country right now, John. I feel like these guys are putting on business suits, but I feel like they should be kids wearing those little spinny caps, you know?
You elect a clown, you get a circus.
What else did I have? I didn't have anything else to vote for.
That's why I said yesterday, Paul, I don't blame you. This is not your fault. This is not, Steve, it's not your turn yet.
I know.
Paul, this is not your fault. This is not on you. Okay, Steve, it's your turn now.
I just have been thinking about you saying that. It was 2 days ago, and yeah. I can't stop thinking about it.
I was rephrasing that to some family members yesterday. Are you still divided with me on this?
Look, who takes responsibility for something here?
Nobody could have seen this coming.
But someone has to take... We as a country...
The president has to take responsibility for this. He's the one that's doing this.
We as a country elected Donald Trump the president. We are the deciders. We did it.
Right. Well, we did it, but what else? But the politicians also added to that, Steve. You had the emails. You had the lying about the sniping. You had all that stuff. No one wanted to vote in Sanders. I mean, I think it's a popularity contest. You know, watch what happens when Dwayne Johnson, if he really goes.
Kid Rock's going to run for Senate.
But that's what this was, too. This was a popularity contest. And I voted, you know, Trump was a somewhat successful guy.
If he had to do it over again, who would you vote for? And Bernie Sanders is not an option.
Well, okay.
He wasn't on the ticket.
I'm gonna have to go with Hillary.
Yeah. I really appreciate your call, Paul. Thanks for joining us. Albert and Tom and the rest of you, I'll try and pick up a couple of phone lines in just a minute. We'll do the news first. We're also going to talk to somebody from CNET about a story that our friend Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist at the Tribune, told us about. And that is, so there's a computer system that is dealing with another computer system. Say you're at work and you're doing some programming and you need your system to check with some other system. I'm not exactly sure what I'm talking about here, but the point is two computers were talking to each other. And you know what they did? They developed an independent language. They didn't start to speak in English or computer code. They started to speak in a different language, and they shut her down because they were like, "Whoa, this could go badly." Isn't that fascinating?
So is that what Elon Musk is warning about?
He and Zuckerberg got into a disagreement about whether or not that was awesome. I don't know what it is. We'll tell you more about that in the next half hour. We started the show talking a little bit about Scaramucci's conversation with a New Yorker reporter and the fallout from that, which actually seems to be negligible. I don't know if the Priebuses are thrilled about it, but the president hasn't said much and seems like life is going on, so we may just chalk this up to another crazy moment in the Trump administration and move on. Just one last call about that, and that was Tom. You're on WGN. Tom, what did you want to say? Hi.
Hi there.
Hey.
I'm confused as to how he gets to say anything about anything until he's officially on the payroll.
Yeah. I got to figure that out myself. Maybe that's one of the reasons the president has been able to sort of be moot on this. Strangely quiet. You know, he didn't come out with...
He's having trouble selling his business. There's some company in China that he's trying to negotiate with, which is another whole problem.
You're talking about Scaramucci. Yeah, I thought he did. I thought he liquidated that asset and was now available to serve the country. But maybe I'm just a little ahead of the game here.
Yep. But, yeah, I mean, until you sign that, you get your W-2s in, or W-4, whatever the W is.
Yeah.
How do you have any authority?
It's an interesting question because he stood before the White House press corps, remember, and said, okay, I'm the boss now. Actually, he said that Sarah Sanders doesn't report to him, or she said that. I'm not sure who said that. The inclination was, my recollection is that both of them report directly to the president now. I believe that's sort of the hierarchy of it. Do you remember that, Steve? Does Sanders report to Scaramucci? Is that the way, or will Sanders
would report to Scaramucci, sure, because that's in the communications office.
I thought they were skipping a step, though. I thought that actually she was going to report directly to the president.
Okay, can I read, this is from The Hill.
Thank you for the phone call, Tom. We'll look into that. Go ahead, Steve.
Speaking to reporters last Friday, Scaramucci said he has worked with OGE, it's a government office. This is about the sale of SkyBridge, to take care of all of my business, and that he was pushing back his official start date to mid-August, so that it's 100% totally cleansed and clean.
So then maybe he'll never actually have that title if it got so unpleasant that they decided it just wasn't going to work out.
I think it's been sold and everything. It's just a matter of disclosure and signing the Chinese characters. No, and what, you know, there's nothing wrong with selling something to a Chinese company. We buy things from Chinese companies. That's just the way it is.
Oh, I got no problem with that. Yeah. I'm just saying you're right. If he doesn't have authority, then I think he shouldn't be even participating in these conversations.
Authority is a fluid thing. I think he speaks for the president right now, and it's his job. He just doesn't officially start.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's...
Listen to you.
Well, that's the way it is.
By the way, somebody who knows on a phone line, it's Ian Scher. Hey, Ian, this is John Williams. Steve Bertrand is here, too. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Executive editor for the West Coast at CNET News. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
I've been fascinated by a story here, Ian. Can I just share with you a little bit about what I'm reading?
Sure.
An artificial intelligence system being developed at Facebook has created its own language. The observations made at Facebook are the latest in a long line of similar cases. In each instance...
Can I interrupt you, John?
Sure.
And Ian, I apologize. Nice to talk to you. This is a story that you've been following a lot and will certainly in the future. A Cook County judge has just cleared the way for the sweetened beverage tax to take effect.
So when does that then happen?
The county has set a start date. I don't know... we don't have a start date yet, but they threw out the lawsuit just now that had been challenging the tax.
Sure, on constitutional grounds, as I recall.
There was something about being vague and all of that, too. So, sorry, man.
Fair enough. Thank you, sir. Back to this article. The observations made at Facebook are the latest in a long line of similar cases. In each instance, an AI, artificial intelligence, being monitored by humans, has diverged from its training in English to develop its own language. The resulting phrases appear to be nonsensical gibberish to humans, but they convey meaning to AI agents. And then they describe one piece of language where one computer named Bob is talking to another computer named Alice. And Bob says, "I can, I, everything else." Alice responds, "Balls have zero, to me, me." And they have sort of interpreted it to mean, "I'll have three of these things and you can have everything else." So they were sort of negotiating something, these two robot artificial intelligence computers. That's fascinating. I'm kind of lost here, Ian. Can you shed a little light on this?
Yeah, first off, your impersonation of the computers was missing the Austrian accent of a Terminator, so I just wanted to
actually
criticize that a little bit.
When I do computer voices, I always go to HAL from 2001.
Oh, okay, all
I'm
right.
Sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
So, first off, I do want to put a little bit at ease everyone who's wondering whether the computers are going to take over and we're all going to die. Right now, that's not exactly where we're leading. What Facebook has been doing is that they've been building artificial intelligence. By the way, Google, Apple, Amazon, everyone's trying to do this. And part of the reason that they're doing this is that if they can build a computer that can respond to your every need and want and desire, then A, you're going to give them a lot of money, but B, they're going to have cracked a code that's going to make it a lot easier for them to do all sorts of the stuff they're trying to do. You know, when Apple, when they're trying to make the phone the center of your life, when Amazon is trying to get you to buy more stuff, right, when Facebook's trying to get you to communicate more and look at more ads, all these things make sense. And with Facebook, what's interesting is that they try to teach what this specific program that they were talking about was a negotiation program. So it was trying to help people, you know, imagine like State Farm, right, or any insurance company creates an application that, you know, you go to Facebook and you say, "I want insurance," and you start negotiating with them. It actually happens with a computer, right? You're talking to a computer, not a real person. And so what's interesting is that it created its own language, as you pointed out, using, you know, English words that make no sense. And Facebook has continuously each time shut it down. And they shared this because they wanted to talk a little bit about how weird it is that AI is doing this, right? Computers obviously have their own way of talking that we've trained them for, but that they're coming up with their own language is interesting. But also the reason that Facebook keeps shutting it down is not because they're scared, but because they want to teach these computers to learn English, even if it's a less kind of, you know, less helpful language for them. Like, the reason that these computers are coming up with something else is that it's easy for them, right? It makes life easier. They're speaking in a language they understand.
Or is more efficient, maybe. Yeah, right.
Exactly. Yeah. And so by being less efficient in their eyes and having to learn English, they're actually going to, Facebook believes they're going to actually going to not only be able to respond to you better, but they'll be able to handle more things thrown at them, right? If we start, you know, expanding into Swahili or in Chinese or whatever, then it will be able to be more capable, right? And by the way, this is what we think of children too, right? If you teach them more than one language, they'll be smarter. All of these types of things are very logical, but that's why this story is very interesting. As we see Facebook treating its computers in a way that I don't know. I don't think we would have had this conversation a decade ago.
All right, but then are you saying, okay, so suppose I call State Farm and I say, "Hey, I want, Allstate's offering me a $100 premium. Can you do better than that?" And would this be a verbal conversation I would be having with a robot?
Well, this is all very hypothetical,
sure.
Right? Right now, it's over text, right? That you would
even then,
you know, we all have, we're all used to doing text messages over our phones.
Yeah.
And but in the future, you can imagine. I mean, already I have, you know, whenever I call up the airlines because, you know, I need to change my flight, I'm having half my conversation with a robot before I speak to a real person.
Yeah, but I don't like that.
I know.
I don't like that.
And I don't like it either, right? But that's because I know it's not a person. And what they're trying to do is get to that point where you don't know the difference. And it's able to do the same things as a person does, and it doesn't matter. Right? And those days are coming. That's going to happen.
Okay, and if I don't know that, I guess that's okay. But I'll tell you, here's a trick they do, and it bugs me. I'll be on the phone to, who is it? Is it the phone company, the cable company, somebody that I'm on the phone with, and I'm in an automated system, and I know that. And so I'll hit button 3, or I'll give the last four numbers of my Social Security number, and then she'll say, hold on while I look that up. And then they play the sound effect of somebody hitting a keyboard. She'll say, hold on, and then you hear this like Lois is on the other phone, and I go, no, this is a sound effect of somebody hitting a keyboard, and it doesn't make me happy.
No, I agree with you. And the stuff that's ahead, that people are trying to push the limits, as you will, it's not cool. And look, I mean, I love, there's an ad that was on television a few years ago where someone hit that number, and they said, I'm a real person. I'm trying to help you.
Oh, yeah, right.
So,
you can't believe
it. I mean, it is a problem, but this stuff is going to get better, and eventually you're not going to be able to tell the difference, which is why it's very interesting inside the tech industry. There's a lot of debate about whether or not how we should be handling this. You know Elon Musk, right, the CEO of Tesla and SpaceX. He has actually been lobbying governors and state legislatures to write laws and regulations today about artificial intelligence and what can be used for. And that's really fascinating because he's kind of whipping up a lot of fear. And, you know, he said stuff like, here's a quote from him, that AI is the biggest risk we face as a civilization, which is, I mean, that's not underselling it. And what's interesting is that, you know, he uses artificial intelligence as well, right? That obviously what controls those Tesla cars on autopilot is artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that we have this debate going on.
I have a question for you about that. I have a question about that, and I know I'm going to sound like a coal miner here. But do we really want robots doing the work that those human beings are doing? I would prefer that the caller be down. If I'm calling my cable company or my phone company, my insurance company, I prefer that I'm talking to a human. I don't actually mind if they're in India, as long as their English is good and they seem like swell people and they can resolve my issue. What do I care where they're sitting? But I would prefer that I have access to a human being. So what's going to happen to all of the human beings in a minute? On WGN. A couple of calls and a guest. His name is Ian Scher. He is, is it Scher or is it Sure? I believe it is Sure. Let's go to the source.
SH.
Say it again, Ian.
It's her with an SH. It's Sure.
Sure. I appreciate you joining us. He's the executive editor for West Coast at CNET News. You hear him sometimes with Bill and Wendy, sometimes with our own Steve Bertrand. And so I just posed the question to you about these bots replacing human beings who would otherwise do some of the things they're learning to do. What's your take about that?
You know, I think that this is one of the questions of our time is that, you know, unlike when we were moving beyond the Industrial Revolution and we were starting to ask the question of what happens to all these people who were in factories and no longer have jobs, artificial intelligence does have the possibility of taking over a lot of the jobs that we have. And it is a real question. What do we do with all these people who may not have jobs? You know, there's estimates within the tech industry and experts out there who say that within 20 years, I think it is, up to half the jobs are going to disappear because of artificial intelligence. And let me point out that the Great Depression was 25% unemployment. The Great Recession was something like 10% unemployment at its worst. So even if they're half wrong, we're at the Great Depression.
But and is
so
it possible that
it's a big question.
Well, but maybe those – so we won't have those jobs. We'll have different jobs. We'll have – code writing jobs or something like that.
Well, we might be, right? But there's also a possibility, and by the way, this is why you see some people starting to talk about this, that our culture needs to move beyond the idea of work, and that you know, stuff like universal basic income, which is being tested now in Europe, where you are just given a basic income, whether or not, whatever you do, that those things are now being talked about within Silicon Valley because people like Mark Zuckerberg, for example, realize that the work that he is doing is going to put a lot of people out of jobs and faster maybe than we can replace them. And that's a big question. We don't want to have we don't want to have a bunch of people unemployed and on the streets, right? And so how do we make the world work when our entire American culture is built around the idea that you have a job, you go to that job every day, you earn a living, right? And if you can't do that, then what do you do?
I want to ask you a different question. I got just a minute left, and I want to get to a phone call, too. Actually, let's take the phone call first, then I wanted to just ask you another tech question off this topic. We'll put you there, and we'll go on line 1, 2. Is it Allie? This is John. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you? Great program. Love it. Listen to it all the time.
Thank you.
You know what? Sometimes when I feel like I don't know if I'm talking to a robot, I'll say, are you a cat? Or what is 10 plus 10 divided by 2? And it just goes blank, nothing. So then I hang up.
Or it says 10.
Well, you know what?
10 plus 10 is 20, divided by 2 is 10, yeah. Are you a cat? But what if they go, no, my name is Paul. How are you? I guess that would pop the bubble anyway.
Yeah.
But you know that frustration where you're talking. I don't even like, here's how, what a Neanderthal I am. I don't love when it says press or say 2. I always press 2. I hate to talk to those machines.
Yeah, I do too.
It's horrid.
I sometimes say bad things to them. All right. Thanks for the phone call, Allie. Have a good day. Well, there's a little trick to at least decide. Hey, Twitter reports $116 million loss. 1 in 5 Americans use Twitter. And tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people around the world do it. It's about 300 million overall. How does is Twitter profitable, to your knowledge,
no.
Ian?
No, it's not profitable at all. That's the number one problem. It's one of the most important parts of politics and of our culture, and it cannot, and they just haven't been able to figure out how to make it a good business.
It had revenue of $573 million, and they don't have overhead like Steel or
no.
How is it that they can't be profitable?
Well, I mean, look, they do have employees and, writing code and doing things like managing different people who are on Twitter and helping them use it. You know, when the Pope joined Twitter, there was a team who helped him do that, taught him how to use it. All those people, they have salaries, right? So it's not as if Twitter doesn't have people that they need to pay and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What the real problem is that they just haven't been able to convince the advertising industry, which is what they rely upon for their money, to that they are worth it, right? And even though you've got like everyone on every tweet that Donald Trump says, you're just watching every single one of them, for some reason, even though they can put an ad right there, they haven't been able to convince Wall Street and convince the advertising industry that it's worth it. And that is a fascinating problem. And the other problem they have, by the way, is that they're not growing, right? They're at 328 million odd users every month who are using it. That's it. Right, Facebook is more than 2 billion. They are more than half the world's online population is using Facebook. A fraction of that is using Twitter. Now, those people are important. Obviously, people are watching what, again, President Trump says all the time. But it's a fascinating situation that they're in, and I don't know how they're going to get out of it. And no one seems to have an answer.
What a pleasure to visit with you, Ian. Let's visit again. I'll listen for you when you visit with Bill and Wendy and Steve Bertrand too.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
At least we try every day. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. This is John. Swing on by. I know you're not.
Lord have mercy.
I know you're not working real hard right now. Lord, what another lovely day in Chicago. We're in the Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. 435 North, right across from the old Wrigley Building. And in the old Tribune Tower for a while longer. Okay, by the way, Steve, if you go to Facebook, on Facebook, I'm King John. We do have the brackets up. We're playing 2 games today. I won't go into any detail now, but I'll just tell you that so far the first 2 games being played are being won by the Montenegro Shove and Time Magazine covers. That will make sense when you follow me on Facebook.
Those are 2 good possibilities.
We got new brackets up. The games are being played today. The first two games are underway.
Now, the NCAA, once they set the brackets, they don't allow later additions. Have you ruled out any?
We do have a wild card or TBA slot in the brackets in the event something crazy happens. But really, what are the chances that there'd be room in the brackets for something else?
Slim to none.
Actually, considering what we've been talking about today, the story about the New Yorker interview with the communications director, that will have to be in the next bracket. It did not make the cut. So we're doing them semi-annually. That will be in the January brackets, maybe. One last note about the president and the craziness, and I know we talk too much about it, or we talk enough about it, but I hear you, I feel you. There was a story on the front page of the A&E section of the Chicago Tribune today, sculptural landscape, manpower, machinery, overshadow magic when it comes to installations. And there's a picture of Cloudgate, the bean at Millennium Park, and the real fake statue, the two words real and fake stacked upon each other on the, I guess, south side of the river in front of Trump Tower. No, it's on the north side of the river in front of Trump Tower, but on the No, I think it's on the south side of the river.
I think it's on the south side.
Yeah. But if you stand there, you can see Trump and real fake. They say that the position of that little, you know, real fake statue is just coincident that it is in front of the tower bearing the president's name. And maybe it is. But there was no coincidence about this. Here's a headline. Chicago deflates plan to fly giant pig balloons in front of Trump Tower. There was an art installation that was being considered. It would also be a bit of a protest. Balloons would float above the Trump Tower. They would be in the shape of pigs, and it would be a one-day installation. The city has said that that's just going to be too complicated. There's too much water traffic, and we're just not going to allow you to float those balloons there. Now, we talked about this a time or two with Jeffrey Roberts, who is the principal at New World Design Limited. He was the guy who was behind this. He's back in our studio again today. Jeffrey, welcome back to WGN.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Mike. Or John.
I got the name of my last guest right, so you can call me Mike.
Okay, John.
What happened here?
We knew it was going to be a complex proposal administratively. And we worked patiently with the city because we wanted to be a partner in this. Generally, they were on board. There were things that were legitimate concerns, and they were mentioned from the get-go, which was there's a lot of traffic on the river at that point. It's a pinch point in the river, and we need to dock a very large barge there for a short period of time. So working with various areas of the city, you know, we kept negotiating. And I'm not saying that we can't get over it somehow. Maybe there's another way for us to kind of base these things that it won't interrupt it as much as we pick a time that it isn't disruptive. But in the end, it was all about the worry about congestion. And also, you can't deny it, if we put that up there for 4 hours, everything that's on the river is going to stop and look at it. And that's what they were most concerned about.
There's no denying the president is critical of Chicago and the mayor does not like the president. But I'm surprised that the city of Chicago wants to entertain that debate. You know, it would seem to me like administratively and politically, the city, this great tourist destination, should just stay out of that. But you think they'll be a willing partner in this?
Well, I'm not going to call it a willing partner, but what we've done is play off the rules as they exist. What we're proposing is an art installation in the public way. We're not asking for anything outside of the rules anywhere. We could be proposing, you know, just round balloons in the middle of the river three blocks down, right? And essentially, by the rules, it's the same proposal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, what's the difference?
No, there's...
I mean,
Do you want me to answer that?
I know what the perceived political differences are. But well, from the standpoint of an application to deploy something like this, it's really not
really
not
so
different.
They should treat it the same.
I think that's the way they've looked at it. They've tried to be objective about it. They realize that there's going to be blowback and there's ramifications, but at least they've not said no. Most of the departments have been willing to say, okay, we could move forward with this as long as it doesn't disrupt things, but ultimately a transportation shut us down.
You needed a quarter. You were looking for $250,000 on the FundMe page, right?
The $250,000 would have paid for the installation here, and it would have allowed us to take it on the road.
I
so
see.
It would have toured it. It takes about To put the barge and the balloons in the air with the rigging and everything, it takes about $80,000, $85,000.
How much money have you raised?
What I'm going to say is that we've raised a lovely amount of money through a lot of generous people. We have more to raise. I think with the additional time now, we're probably going to be looking at large format donors to help us over the top and just see how far we can take this.
Over the top. Okay, you don't have to speak any more specifically about that, but I'm going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have $85,000?
No, we don't.
Yeah. But somebody could write a check and make that happen if they were
indeed
well enough endowed and so politically inclined.
Indeed.
I could think of people that could do that. None of them are in this room, but I mean, somebody could do that.
I think nationally, which has been the exposure of this project, there's been enough expression of interest that we can look around and we could potentially even cap out the goal for the touring package.
Maybe this city isn't the place. Maybe some other city will host it. Does it have to happen in Chicago?
Chicago's my town. I would like to deploy it here. I think that from the standpoint of its message, it works really well here, and it's where we conceived the idea. We can certainly do this kind of thing in Las Vegas or Vancouver in a different format and block the sign and maybe make the statement. But this particular building is a really bold gesture, and it's right in the heart of the city and a very, very viewed part of the city.
I'll bet you've gotten some negative tweets, texts, comments.
Oh, absolutely.
And what do they do? How do they find you? They go to your Facebook page or something?
Well, they through the project website, they can actually email us on an info address.
And what kinds of things are you hearing?
You know, what's really kind of disconcerting is we hear a lot of positive stuff. But the stuff we get coming in negative is almost maniacal. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's often just a rant that somebody is making that is vicious and in some cases life-threatening.
You know, I have mixed feelings about this. I don't know if I'm vacillating or if I've been mixed all along. Maybe that's the same thing, but maybe sometimes I'm very pro. Maybe sometimes I'm a little con. Maybe sometimes I'm in between. But I just see maybe because since when I first heard about this and today, things are even crazier and angrier. And so maybe we should be looking for things that console rather than exacerbate. And this isn't a consolation.
No, it's not a consolation. And I, you know,
or
sad
conciliation.
Sad to say, I'm not sure what kind of piece of art you could create that would reconcile the massive differences we have here. And I'm just trying to draw a wedge. What we have done all along is stand on the notion is it has levity. But the message behind it is very much very serious, based in literature and music, and that message is all about lessons from the past.
Yeah,
and we all need to be aware of that.
It's titled Flying Pigs on Parade, and explain again why it's called that.
It's called Flying Pigs on Parade because the perception of Mr. Trump winning the election was the veritable when pigs fly. Right. So that's how we got the name. The kind of the foundation of the idea came from a lot of other things. The foundation of the idea came from the Pink Floyd float of the famous pig balloon over the Battersea Park power station in London. Which was informed by, was a musical interpretation of Animals, or Animal Farm, rather. And then if you take a read of George Orwell's Animal Farm, you see these amazing allegorical interpretations of what happened after the Russian Revolution. And then it really digs into meaning. So we had four pigs named after each of the pigs that are in the novella. We painted them gold, and that's been an open point of comment for our leader, is his preference for gold-leafed finished interiors. There's also the reference that we talked about last time about the reference to Miss Piggy in the campaign.
Yeah, right.
Miss Universe contestant.
So it resonates a lot of ways.
It's very rational. The whole thing is extremely rational. And again, it goes against the irrational nature of things. I'm an independent. I wasn't thrilled with Hillary as a candidate. I didn't think the Democrats picked well there.
No.
But the absurdity of the selection that bubbled up on the other side seemed to make that choice pretty easy if you were being somewhat rational about what could happen in this country.
Last time you were here, I asked you this question. Tell me if your answer has changed. Any regrets about this? Because at the end of the day, you're a businessman. You need clients, some of whom may not appreciate your art. Are you still glad you're doing this?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting you ask, because with the news every other day becoming more and more entangled and more obscure, it just kind of reaffirms our attitude toward the design scheme from the get-go.
The article in the paper says you guys might do this next year.
We're going to negotiate with the city. We're going to continue to fundraise. We're going to negotiate with the city. We're going to look at different deployment tactics to see if there's some way that we can put this up without it impinging on traffic. You know, I don't know. There might be a way. So we're going to study that. We've got a lot of engineering in it at this point. We'll take it another step.
Anything else I should be asking you about? Anything else new about this?
No. I mean, the thing has been, we've tried to be a good art kind of patron with the city and say, okay, we're willing to work very kind of collaboratively with you on this. And again, that speaks to our whole mission and our interpretation of the thing, where we've got such caustic actions in American government right now, where people are going head to head, and they were doing this in the last administration as well. When we work together collaboratively, we can actually achieve some pretty magnificent things.
So the effort to float 30-foot by 15-foot helium balloons in front of Trump Tower, four big pigs, as part of the Flying Pigs on Parade installation, is deflated for now, says the Chicago Tribune. That seems to be apt, but it didn't say popped.
That's right.
It's you haven't heard the last of this. It's nice to see you, Jeffrey. Thanks for coming into our studio again.
Thanks, John. Appreciate having me.
It's 2:20. This is WGN. What do you think of this? Northwest Side Alderman, is it? Oh, shoot. It looks like Gilbert Villegas, but would that be Gilbert Villegas?
Villegas, I believe, yeah.
Has introduced an ordinance that would give any person, here's the exact language, any person, animal control officer, or law enforcement officer authority to let themselves into an unattended vehicle by any reasonable means if they see an animal inside that they think is suffering. So if it's too hot in the car or too cold in the car and you go, these idiots, they're in there shopping, they're in the casino, they're at the mall, whatever they're doing, and that dog, it's hot in there, you can get a rock, break the window, let it out, and that's A-okay. I guess that's not currently the case. So they want an ordinance that sort of empowers you.
Wait, it's not currently the case that you can walk around and break into people's cars?
You know, the one thing this doesn't address is then who pays for the window?
Yeah, what if you're wrong?
Also, the person, when they do come out of the mall, and this always goes well, they always go, oh, thank you, I feel so terrible. Then they get hit with a $300 to $1,000 fine. Reasonable means would include allowing people to break a window on the car if there's no other way to get inside. The alderman intends to introduce a companion measure in September protecting people from being sued by the vehicle owner. So don't save that dog until September. But when the companion piece goes through, then they will not be able to sue you. People who free an animal could not get in trouble for damage to the vehicle under the planned ordinance. But what if, I don't know why I'm looking at this so closely, but I just know what's going to happen. It's going to be 85 degrees someday, not 102. But it's going to be kind of warm in there, and somebody's going to have the window cracked, and a dog's going to be in there, and he's going to be doing this. And you don't know how long he's been in there, but it doesn't look comfortable. And then you're going to pick up a brick, and you're going to break it and free it, and then there's going to be this scene in the parking lot, and then the person's going to come out, and there's going to be a bigger scene. And you won't be in trouble because you did that, and they're not going to be happy about your intentions. So I'm just not confident this is going to go as well as it sounds. My number is 312-981-7200. Call or text me and tell me what you think about this. I almost think you don't need an ordinance. That is, if the dog's really suffering, heck, go ahead and pick up the rock and save the dog. Don't wait for an ordinance. Just do it. But I wonder if you now make that legal and able to do it with impunity. Now I think you've almost created a problem that we don't need.
I mean, it's a terrible thing to leave your dog in a hot car, obviously. Yeah. But if you ever looked at my dog inside a car, you would think she was suffering. I mean, she's an old dog. She lies around. She pants. She, you know what I mean?
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, imagine the scenario I described, Steve. 85 degrees, windows cracked.
dog panting. Is that unfair?
Well, a lot of people would say yes.
Okay, how about 82 degrees? How about today? What's the current temperature? No, let me guess, 77 somewhere.
Yeah. Well, okay, the other thing, though, is you're in your mind writing how long the dog's been in the car. Maybe it's been 20 seconds and the owner's 30
more seconds away. I'm going to run in and I'm going to run back out.
Right.
You don't know that. So maybe you're standing there for a while. Now maybe you stood there for 10 minutes and I'm still in. I mean, it's just so hard to know. And, you know, there are these extreme cases with human beings and pets. And you go, oh, my God, this is insane. It's 102. I've been standing here for 3 minutes and it's a death trap. Free the dog. But it gets very vague because they say if you think the dog is suffering, you may use any reasonable means. Well, what's reasonable? I got to get the dog out of there. Right. I'm going to get a hammer and I'm going to pound your window open and save the dog.
When I was a kid, I used to beg my mom to leave me in the car while she went into the Sears.
Did you
stay in the car?
A lot of times, sure.
Yeah.
It was, you know, we didn't have seatbelts back then either. Don't panic, folks. They were good parents.
Yeah.
It's amazing any of us survived. Your parents are smoking in the front seat. You don't have a seatbelt on. They're doing 70. And the dashboard is made of metal.
And then they're going to run in and do back to school shopping while you sit in the back seat.
My dad used to sit. My dad had a big thing on Saturdays. He'd do the dad thing. All right, I'm going to go down to the, what was the name of the clothing store in downtown Joliet? And he'd go pick out a tie or get a new blazer. And for some reason, it seemed like we were always going to Montgomery Ward's to buy block salt. So that always sounded, he said, would you want to come along? And I always thought it'd be kind of fun to go into town, go shop and go do something. But watching Dad pick out a sport coat and buy block salt at Montgomery Ward's, Monkey Ward's, as we used to call it, is just never enough to kind of motivate me to get past that and maybe to a breakfast at the Golden Bear. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines here. Leanna, you're on WGN. What do you want to say?
I have 4 rescue dogs. I live in Joliet, and I love to take them with me when I'm not working. And they have, I guess it's an ordinance. The dog can be in the car if it's between 35 and 75 degrees and the windows are cracked and, you know, the dog is not showing signs of having been there for many hours or whatever. And I've had people call on me when I've, you know, run into the bank or whatever, and they won't give me a ticket, you know, if it's between those temperatures.
35 to 75. And those are correct. Interesting. Thanks for the help, Linnea. Appreciate the call. I'm going to go from you to Steve. You're on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, John. So I was thinking, this problem will just take care of itself, because with the push towards concealed carry, when the car owner comes out and sees that you smashed their window,
right,
you know, everybody's just going to have a nice conversation and work it all out. Actually, you know what? Let's, the concealed carry person can use their gun to shoot the window.
That's not even funny. I was gonna say this very thing. I was driving home last week on the Kennedy or the Edens, I don't know which, there was a guy in a motorcycle who speeded past me in a T-shirt, and he was leaned over right on his handlebars so that I could see in his waistband he had a gun tucked.
He leaned over. He was literally displaying it to you?
Well, he was in a motorcycle, so his T-shirt was flying all over, and
you could just see
the gun
tucked
in his waistband. It may well have been legal, but, you know, that's exactly what will happen.
Thank you for the phone call, Steve. It's 2:31. Lots of phone calls and texts about this. 312-981-7200 either way. Before your news, we were talking about the proposed ordinance in Chicago that would empower you to break somebody's window if you think the dog inside is suffering. If the dog in the car, it's too hot, it's too cold, you break the window, they'll get the $300 to $1,000 fine. And not only will you have the right to save the dog, but a companion bill they're expecting in September will keep you from being sued. So we were just asking if you think that's a good idea or not. The dog shouldn't suffer, but I just think we're creating a can of worms here where we don't need one. The texters include these. Animal, child, I would break the window. I would pay the fine. People who do this lack common sense. John, what happens if the dog escapes from the car and bites someone? Who will be responsible then? In fact, a few of you said, what happens if the dog gets away
or the dog bites one of the rescuers. John, you don't need to break somebody's window. All you need to do is call the police. John, people will use this just to cause distraction. I don't know what that means. John, after you break somebody's window, they have a concealed permit. They can shoot you. Is that what you were thinking about, Steve?
Yeah, I think they can. You know, there was this story earlier this summer we talked about on Lower Michigan Avenue. There were a series of thefts, and a couple guys or someone reached into a car at a stop sign or stoplight, and the guy had a gun and opened fire on them and was not facing any charges.
But I think you need to be scenario specific. If I come out of the mall and I see you broke the window on my car, I don't get to shoot you.
No,
I'm in the car, maybe.
I wouldn't think if you were stealing my wallet that I would get to shoot you, you know, if you're not
maybe
danger.
The wallet is still in the car, you mean?
Yeah, but if you're not in danger,
I wouldn't
think you could either, but I'm just saying here was a case where someone was running away from having stolen from a car and they were shooting at them and they didn't face charges. So if you come out of a mall and you see someone which you think is, look at it this way, kidnapping or dog-napping your dog, do you get to shoot them? I don't know.
If anybody wants a couple of rescue wiener dogs, 312-981-7200, you do not need to break into my car. I will drive them to your house. I love these dogs, but my goodness, they're work sometimes. Getting back to the text, hey, leave your pets at home. Well, there's a solution. But I'm sorry, sometimes Bingo likes to drive. We put him in Brenda's lap. I get in the driver's seat. We go for a Dairy Queen. Everybody's happy. Sometimes Brenda would take the dogs to Arby's and share a roast beast sandwich with them.
That's so sweet.
Isn't that nice?
Or savory, rather.
Touché. John, look up the temperature in a car if it's 85 degrees outside. It can reach 100 in no time. And it's against the law. I would not hesitate to break the window. Well, I think if a dog is suffering, do the right thing. Break the window, unless the car's moving. Break the window, let the dog out. And then, I wonder what happens. Have you ever been in a scene like that?
I was just going to say, do you know of any dogs who have died after being left in a car?
That I don't doesn't mean I'll bet it doesn't happen.
Oh, no, I'm sure it happens, too. I just wonder how often.
I think
if it did, the owners would be charged and...
On the front page of the Sun Times.
Although maybe you wouldn't know it happened if my dog died in my car. I don't think I would necessarily inform people about it.
Yeah, right. But if there was one of these scenes where they come upon the dog and the dog has died in the car, the mall locked.
Yeah, that would be big news.
That's why there is a Chicago Sun Times. But I also wonder, what's that scene like then when the person comes out of the car? Are they apologetic? Are they, you know, crestfallen? Oh my God, what was I thinking? The time got away from me. Or I forgot that this happens with children all the time. I forgot the kid was in there. Can you imagine that? So I don't know how that plays out. It's 2:43 here on WGN. Our Bright Side of Life segment ain't this. We're about to do it, though. So, Elif, I'll tell you what. You got a couple calls on this? We've got just a minute or two here before we get to the bright side. You asked Steve. Hey, Linda, this is John. You're on the air. How are you? Breaker, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi. I work in the Oak Brook Shopping Center, and this just happened last week in front of the restaurant where I work, where a woman left a dog in the car. Another person saw the dog in distress. She broke the window and called the police at the same time, and the dog's temperature was already 109 degrees. They did take the dog to the emergency dog, and the dog did die.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
And the woman was arrested and charged.
Are you kidding? Right there in the parking lot?
Right there in the parking lot.
So were you there when she came back out and realized what happened?
I was not. My coworkers told me the whole story. And she said that she always takes the dog with her, but her son called her last minute and said, let's have dinner, and she totally forgot that the dog was in the car.
That's exactly what I was thinking about. Wow. And one of those hot, humid days, right? Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Wow.
Linda, amazing. Thanks for the phone call.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, have a good day. Wow. Okay, by the way, Steve's News was sponsored by CMEgroup.com. We like to do this on Fridays to end the week, start the weekend. Ro and Anna are right around the corner, but we're going to do the bright side now. This is where you call or text 312-981-7200. Tell us some good news in your world. why you're smiling. And it could be that it's a sunny day. It could be you heard a funny joke. It could be that you are sharing an Arby's roast beef with my wife. Whatever it is, I just want to hear what some good news is, something that's making you happy. Let's share those right now. 312-981-7200. Call that number. I want to hear your voice. You can text, too, to 312-981-7200. Here's a couple of weekend events that you might be interested in, too. In Wicker Park, they're having the Wicker Park Fest today and tomorrow. I'm sorry, Saturday and Sunday at Wicker Park. $10 gets you in. It's music from more than 40 bands. Some of them are local, lots of food. And Andersonville, the big sidewalk sale is today through Sunday on North Clark Street in Andersonville. Typical summer yard sale stuff, bargain price goodies, that sort of thing. The stuff that I'm still trying to get rid of from my basement, you can now buy from other people in Andersonville. In Berwyn, it's the Bow Wow Luau, Sunday noon to 4 p.m., the Urban Mutt. Dog and owner's best dress contest, petting zoo, doggy sprinklers, raffles, a Hawaiian picture area, and more. This is at the Urban Mutt. The Bow Wow Luau is Sunday at noon in Berwyn. Mundelein, they've got the outdoor Cadillac Groove concert, Sunday from 5 to 6:30. At the park, it's free. Bring your own picnic food. You can also purchase from famous Frankie's Hot Dog in Mundelein. That's the concert Sunday at 5 in Mundelein. In Geneva, the French Market is this weekend, Sunday from 9 to 2. Geneva's commuter parking lot is where they're doing this. A French-style open-air market, variety of local businesses. You can interact with your neighbors and get some good deals. That's in Geneva. The French Market is Sunday at 9 a.m. Okay, all the phone lines are ringing, so we pick them up next. Here we go now.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad.
All our phone lines are...
Other things just make you swear and curse.
Busy, we're about to clear them up.
When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle.
I want to hear why you're smiling.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
Sing it home if you know the words. Always.
Always look on the bright side.
Now whistle.
Always look on the light.
We normally start in the newsroom, but I actually see Violetta Podramatic is in traffic. Let the ladies go first. Violetta, you want to play?
Sure.
What's your bright side? Give me some good news in the Podramatic world.
Not only do I love this song, but I just did my first weekend warning since I've been back from Serbia, and it was a lot of fun.
Your first weekend what?
Weekend warning. It's a video on WGNradio.com.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I see. You were just shooting that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I'm sure it's fantastic.
And it's so beautiful out, but unfortunately, the beautiful weather also brings traffic, which we're warning people about.
Always look on the
Steve Bertrand, what's the good news in the newsroom?
The Cubs are heading to Milwaukee, and the correct team is in first place.
Life is quite absurd.
Speaking of sports, Kevin, you want to play? What's your bright side?
Bright side, I'll be up there Sunday to watch one of those games between the two rivals. I'll also be golfing tomorrow. It's about a perfect weekend for me planned, John.
I got a perfect weekend planned, too. I will be assembling a table tennis. A table tennis table. In fact, I was watching a video of how to do it and sent a link to the video to my son.
And then your kids can play beer pong.
Yeah, is this for actual ping pong or
this
for beer pong for your boys?
I was at Binny's the other day and thought, wow, look at all the ping pong balls for sale. That is so weird. And I started to look for paddles, and then I thought, wait a minute, this is crazy.
Right. Next to the red Solo cups.
I was so slow to that thing. I'm like, oh, I get it. Oh, never mind. Ella, if you want to play, what's your bright side?
The weather.
Yeah, how can you not love this?
Just push your...
All right, let's pick up some phone lines, too. We'll read some texts as well. Bob called in first. Hey, Bob, why are you smiling? You're on WGN.
I'm smiling for two reasons, John.
Yeah.
The first is we have a daughter in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. We enjoy hearing you back and forth and glad that you're back here.
Thank you, sir.
The real reason is that my wife is diabetic. She gets shots in her eyes alternately once a month. Because of going blind, and for the first time ever in several years of this, she had improvement in the eye that received the shot this last time.
How about that?
Can see a little bit better in that eye, and we are rejoicing.
Oh, Bob, what an interesting call. Thanks for joining us. Speaking of which, John, my bright side, 16 million people will not lose health care.
Here's another one. Hey, John, my son was just informed that he qualified as an Iowa resident for in-state tuition at the University of Iowa. Oh, that's a beautiful thing.
If life seems jolly rotten, there's something.
Let's go to, is it Dennis? This is John. What's your bright side?
It was when you said monkey warts. Reminded me of riding behind my parents' car with a sheet of plywood over the foot hole area so we wouldn't fall in there because we weren't wearing our seatbelt.
Yeah, no kidding.
Going to get some ice cream and maybe some candy at the candy counter.
Yeah, yeah. Those are our old days at Monkey Wards. Thank you, sir. Dennis, thanks for the call. We go from you to Don. Hey, Don, this is John. What's your bright side?
Hello, King John. How you doing today?
Talk to me, buddy. What's your good news?
My good news is I got to spend last weekend in Dallas at the Mary Kay Convention with my beautiful bride.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Oh boy, Donnie, thanks for the call. We go from you now to Joe. Hey, Joe, what's your bright side?
Hi, John. Last week, Blake and I took our two grandkids, daughter and son, down to St. Louis by Amtrak. And the riverboat, and they loved it.
Yeah, St. Louis is a fun town. I'm glad you had a good weekend. Thanks.
If life seems jolly rotten,
go to, I think it's Rick next on line five. Hey, Rick, this is John. What's your bright side?
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm good, man.
I am on 294 in bumper-to-bumper traffic. That's not my bright side.
All right.
But the other end is I'm heading to the Milwaukee Brewers Cubs series. And rooting on the Cubs and hooking up with my son for the weekend.
Oh, what a great weekend. What a great time you're going to have. Thanks for the call.
Your life is quite absurd, and death's the final word.
Hey, John, this is a text. My bright side is I did not miss the bright side. I'm listening. Hey, John, I'm happy because I'm going bowling with my mom and my boyfriend is coming home tomorrow. That's my bright side.
Always look on the bright side.
How about Joan? This is John. What's your bright side, Joan? You're on the air.
My dog had surgery. She's healing beautifully, and I'm very happy. She feels great.
Always look on the light side of life.
This is Julie. Why are you smiling, Julie? You're on WGN.
Hi, because I'm 37 years old, and I get my braces off tomorrow.
Smile for us, Julie.
Thank you.
Silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle. That's the thing.
Hey, Bill, this is John. You're on WGN.
John, it's Bill in Ohio celebrating 16 years of marriage to my beautiful wife. I couldn't do any better. She couldn't do any worse.
How
about that? Hey, Judy Pilak in the newsroom, you want to give us your bright side?
Oh, my goodness. I picked up a fabulous Philco radio on the free table at work.
You're kidding. There was a Philco free radio over there?
Can you believe it?
Was it one of those wooden ones with the push buttons?
It was, yes.
Did it have WGN on the call?
It does have WGN on one of the buttons.
That was from my basement.
I know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Thanks, John.
I could have sold that. Hey, Judy, give me $20, will you?
Yeah, sure. I'm good for it.
Uh-huh. Let's talk to Julie. You're on WGN. Julie, what's your bright side?
My bright side is I'm celebrating my granddaughter's second birthday today and my dad's 95th birthday on Sunday. So, pretty cool.
How about that? And a good weekend to do it. Thanks, Julie. Julie sounded way too young to have a granddaughter. This is Chris. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Chris?
I'm going to an ice cream social tomorrow with the dogs in Spring Grove.
That's the thing.
This is Betty. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Betty?
Oh, I'm smiling for two reasons, John. First of all, I love the bright side. But my granddaughter, Danielle, will be a bat mitzvah girl tomorrow. And my youngest daughter, Pam, will get a master's of science in nursing in August.
Wow, that's a good one. Thanks for the call. Have a great day. Congrats to everybody. This is Peggy. Hey, Peggy, I'm John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
My bright side is at 69, after 7 months of being off work for medical reasons, I have finally gone back to work, and I couldn't be happier.
Boy, oh boy. I love it when you said you are 69 years old.
Yes, I am.
I love that they let you back, that you're still working and enjoying that.
Well, in nursing, you can pretty much do that. Work until you're ready to retire.
Nicely done, Peggy. Thanks for the call. Let's go from Peggy to Don. Hey, Don, are you there?
Yes.
You're on the air. What's your bright side? Hi.
Oh, I have a wonderful bright side. My 19-year-old granddaughter, Addison, is just now arriving at O'Hare Airport after a six-week study work team job for Loyola University in Rwanda.
Oh, wow. Well, you're anxious to see.
And Addison is one half of a group that's a pair that's going to be 20 at the end of the month, her twin brother, Clark. So I have twin grandchildren, Clark and Addison. For life
is quite absurd. Congrats. By the way, John, my bright side is my teenage son likes me today. John, it's sweet corn and tomato season. Yay. John, my bright side is I'm preparing for my son and daughter-in-law's wedding shower tomorrow with the family. John, here's my bright side. 1,194 days till the next election. Always look on. So many calls. Let's go to Lori. No, I'm sorry, Debbie. Debbie, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Today is my grandson Logan's second birthday.
Happy birthday. There's something you forgot. And this is Yvonne. Hey, Yvonne, this is John. What's your bright side?
My bright side today is I'm going to pick up my daughters, my twins' daughters from college. They graduated on Mother's Day weekend 2017. I am done. And they could now get them a job, and I don't have to pay no more bills.
You are what we call out of college jail, Yvonne. Isn't that a beautiful thing?
Beautiful thing. Twins. Just not even that. They twins.
Wow. Hey, congratulations to all. That's our bright side. We do this. Hey, David, you got a couple you want me to read? We do this on Fridays. Tell your friends. We could all use a smile. We could all use a bright side, and that is the bright side. John, my 9-year-old son completed his first 4-H fair and won state fair alternate on one of his projects. That's my bright side. Hey, John, I'm going to the Cubs-Brewers game tomorrow night. I'll be moving into college in 21 days, and I am so excited. That's how quick the summer goes, is that college is right around the corner for some of these kids. I mean, really. I don't even have my ping pong table assembled yet. That is my indoor-outdoor table tennis facility.
Your beer pong table.
Nope, we're not playing any beer pong on the indoor-outdoor table tennis facility. And it will be not used to store laundry or various and sundry items.
There's a new game called Champagne Pong.
Mm-hmm. Is it like beer pong?
Similar.
You guys will have to come over and we'll paddle it up a little bit. Are you guys game to come play the game?
I love a little table tennis action.
Yeah. I'm very bad, but I'll come.
I'm nervous about actually assembling it correctly because you don't want to get it off. But
slanted.
We'll, yeah, exactly.
Maybe cheating.
Well, I know. I want it to be nice and level and even. So my son and I are going to, I'm really looking forward to doing that this weekend. I don't know that he shares my enthusiasm for the project, but there it is.